Part 2, The Paths and the Tarot, T-A-R-O-T. Here is the man with three staves, and here the wheel, and here is the one-eyed merchant, and this card, which is blank, is something he carries on his back, which I am forbidden to see. I do not find the hanged man. Fear death by water. T.S. Eliot, The Wasteland. The Sefer Yetzirah, describing how the world was created, begins, "In 32 wonderful paths of wisdom did Yah, Jehovah, Sabaoth, the God of Israel, the Elohim of the living, the King of ages, the merciful and gracious God, the Exalted One, the Dweller in eternity, most high and holy, engrave his name by the three Sepharim, means of expression, numbers, letters, and sounds." God used numbers, letters, and sounds in creation because God is man writ large, and three important human ways of expressing one's thoughts are by counting, writing, and making meaningful noises. The 32 wonderful paths of wisdom are the 10 sfirot, or numbers, and the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet. The 22 Hebrew letters are associated with the 22 works of creation in Genesis, and are believed to contain all wisdom, all truth, all knowledge of God and the universe. In the Kabbalah, they are connected with the 22 paths, the roads which lead from one sphera to another. The letters and the paths account for everything in the universe, and they are the soul's way to God and the magician's way to power, the steps in the process of spiritual expansion through which man can extend himself to cover the entire universe and control it. Their interpretation is enriched, but also complicated by the fact that they are linked with the 22 major trumps of the tarot pack. The tarot is a pack of curious cards, which are the ancestors of our modern playing cards. It is still used in fortune-telling and in a game called tarocchini, played in Italy and Central Europe. Many occultists believe that the tarot was invented by the ancient Egyptians as a repository of their occult lore, and was brought into Egypt by the gypsies. A different occult tradition says that the cards were designed by a committee of learned Kabbalists in Fez in A.D. 1200. Gnostic, Neoplatonic, and Cathar influences have been seen in them, but the early history of playing cards is lost in obscurity, and no one really knows when or where the tarot came into existence. The earliest undisputed references to cards in Europe do not come till the late 14th century. The mad King Charles VI of France was supplied with a tarot pack in 1392, and some cards which are thought to have belonged to this pack are still preserved in Paris. There is something extraordinarily fascinating about the tarot. It opens strange windows into a world in which things are never quite what they seem, can never quite be grasped, a sunlit medieval landscape of tiny figures moving like marvelous toys. The fool with cap and bells, the emperor and empress with a glittering cavalcade, death at his reaping, the hermit with staff and lamp, the hanged man swinging from his gibbet, the pale tower falling. If they could be fully understood, occultists believe that these figures would reveal the secret of the inner mechanism of the universe, the hidden rhythms of the dance of life. The early tarot packs had varying numbers of cards and various names for the suits. What is now regarded as the standard pack has four suits of 14 cards each: king, queen, knight, page, our knave, and the 10 down to the ace. The suits are swords, our spades, cups, hearts, coins or pentacles, diamonds, and wands or staffs, clubs. It has been suggested that the suits are connected with the four sacred objects of the Grail legends: the sword, the cup, the dish, and the lance. Besides these minor cards, there are 22 others, the major trumps. Their proper order is uncertain. The surviving trumps of the Charles VI pack are not numbered. But in the usual order, they are 0, the fool, 1, the juggler, 2, the female pope, 3, the empress, 4, the emperor, 5, the pope, 6, the lovers, 7, the chariot, 8, strength, 9, the hermit, 10, the wheel of fortune, 11, Justice. 12, The Hanged Man. 13, Death. 14, Temperance. 15, The Devil. 16, The Falling Tower. 17, The Stars. 18, The Moon. 19, The Sun. 20, The Day of Judgment. 21, The World. Although different packs have different designs, figures, and symbols, there is a rough general similarity. A complete pack is illustrated in A.E. Waite's Pictorial Key to the Tarot. It was specially drawn for the book, with some of the cards rectified to fit their true occult interpretation. Unfortunately, Waite's cards are singularly ugly, and many occultists have quarreled with his rectification. Illustrations of older cards, including some from the Magnificent Charles VI pack, can be found in Hargrave's History of Playing Cards. There are almost as many interpretations of the tarot, occult, Christian, gypsy, psychological, as there are interpreters. The cards contain such a richness of symbolism and suggestion that no two people are likely to react to them in quite the same way. Most occultists would probably agree with one modern commentator that, quote, it may be that the deepest occult wisdom of the tarot cannot be put into words at all, and in the end the seeker is told only what he cannot find for himself, unquote. Modern Kabbalistic interpretations bristle with erotic symbolism. The meaning of each trump depends partly on its design and number, but mainly on its position on the tree. The difficulty which plagues all tarot interpretation is the question of the placing of the fool, which has no number and corresponds to the joker of a modern pack. It is often assigned to path 21, but in Crowley's system it is placed on path 1, and this seems to give the most satisfactory results, though it has the disadvantage of putting the numbers of the trumps and paths out of step. Waite follows the same system, although he tries to conceal the fact. The system of correspondences, which throws additional light on the meaning of each trump and path, is an expanded version of the one in the Sefer Yetzirah, which divides the Hebrew letters into groups of 3, 7, and 12, corresponding to three elements, fire, air, and water, there is no room for earth in the classification, 7 planets, and 12 zodiac signs. Some of the correspondences are shown in the following table. There are 7 columns. Path number, letters, tarot trumps, elements, planets, and zodiac signs, creatures, plants, colors. 1. Aleph, 0. Fool, air, man, eagle, aspen, pale yellow. 2. Bet, 1. Juggler, mercury, ape, ibis, swallow, vervain, palm, yellow. 3. Gimel, 2. Female pope, moon, dog, hazel, almond, blue. 4. Dalet, 3. Empress, Venus, dove, sparrow, swan, rose, myrtle, emerald green. 5. He, 4. Emperor, Aries, Mars, ram, owl, geranium, scarlet. 6. Vo, 5. Pope, Taurus, Venus, bull, mallow, red, orange. 7. Zayin, 6. Lovers, Gemini, mercury, magpie, all hybrids, orchid, orange. 8. Het, 7. Chariot, cancer, moon, crab, turtle, lotus, amber. 9. Tet, 8. Strength, Leo, sun, lion, sunflower, greenish-yellow. 10. Yod, 9. Hermit, Virgo, mercury, virgin, anchorite, snowdrop, lily, narcissus, yellowish-green. 11. Cuff. 10. Wheel. Jupiter. Eagle. Oak, poplar. Violet. 12. Lamed. 11. Justice. Libra, Venus. Elephant. Aloe. Emerald green. 13. Mem. 12. Hanged man. Water. Snake, scorpion. All water plants. Deep blue. 14. Nun. 13. Death. Scorpio, Mars. Scorpion, beetle, lobster, wolf. Cactus. Greenish blue. 15. Samech. 14. Temperance. Sagittarius, Jupiter. Centaur, horse, dog. Rush, blue. 16. Ain. 15. Devil. Capricorn, Saturn. Goat, ass. Thistle, indigo. 17. Pei. 16. Falling tower. Mars. Horse, bear, wolf. Absinthe, rue. Scarlet. 18. Sade. Aquarius, Saturn. Man, eagle, peacock. Coconut, violet. 19. Kof. 18. Moon. Pisces, Jupiter. Fish, dolphin. Opium, crimson. 20. Resh. 19. Sun. Sun. Lion, sparrowhawk. Sunflower, heliotrope. Orange. 21. Sheen. 20. Day of judgment. Fire. Lion. Red poppy, nettle. Orange, scarlet. 22. Toh. 21. World. Saturn. Crocodile. Ash, yew, cypress. Indigo. The trumps and paths can be considered from two different points of view. Diagram 5. If they are followed downwards from the top of the tree, they show the evolution of the universe from God. They are the paths which led from God to man. In the opposite order, starting from the foot of the tree, they are the way of the soul's ascent to God. The Kabbalist begins at the foot of the tree and works upwards, following the course of the serpent of wisdom which coils itself round and round the tree. This means that he travels all the paths. Path 22 to reach Yesod, paths 20 and 21 to Hod, paths 17, 18, and 19 to Netzach, and so on. It is easier to follow this progress if the trumps are taken in reverse order. 21. The world corresponds to the 22nd path leading from Malkut, earth, to the threshold of the astral plane in Yesod. The card shows a naked woman holding a wand in each hand and dancing in a garland of flowers. She is a symbol of joy, lightness, and release, the leaving of earthly existence and the entry into a higher world. This is death, in a sense, and so is the subduing of the mind and body through the Kabbalist's exercises. Saturn is the planet of death, and the ash, yew, and cypress are associated with death and graveyards. The crocodile stands for the plunge from the solid, dry land of ordinary life into the flowing water of a more ethereal and deeper plane of experience. 20. The Day of Judgment. A great winged angel blows a trumpet, and the dead rise up from their tombs. What is it that within us sounds a trumpet? Waite asks. And all that is lower in our nature rises in response, almost in a moment, almost in the twinkling of an eye. The answer is desire, sexual or spiritual, and the card is a symbol of aspiration, the yearning for better things. It is one of several cards of death and resurrection, life gained through the death or release and transformation of man's earthly nature. The nettle is the sting of death, the red poppy is blood, and the sleep of death. Shin is the letter of the Holy Spirit, and the Sefer Yetzirah links it with fire, the passionate flames of longing which carry the divine spark upward. 19. The sun shines on two children who are playing happily by a high wall. Its path leads to Hod, higher mental faculties, and it shows the descent of light from on high, the dazzling light of true intelligence which frees the mind from the petty concerns and restrictions of the world around it. The light purges away conventional and accepted ideas, beginning a process which is continued in the next card. Although he still thinks of himself as a separate being, the Kabbalist begins to identify himself consciously with the one life of the universe represented by the sun. Like the merciless and keen-sighted sparrowhawk, he soars towards the sun. Like the flowers of the heliotrope, he follows the sun's course. The transition from the sun to 18, the moon, is one from light to darkness. The moon hangs in the night sky, shedding drops of blood on a path which leads away into the distance between two towers. A dog and a wolf are howling at the moon, and a crab crawls up onto the land from a pool. 18 reduces to 9, the number of initiation, shown here as the breaking of the hymen. The letter Kof is supposed to represent the back of the head, and the card is a symbol of the underworld of the mind and the Kabbalist's penetration of the unknown. The falling blood is a menstruum, a fluid in which a solid body is dissolved, and stands for a state of flux in the mind in which the reassuringly solid bodies of self-certainty, accepted ideas, and accustomed ways of thinking have been dissolved and washed away. Through this inner night, the creatures of imagination and nightmare move, illusions and deceptions, dreams and fantasies. The dog and the wolf are the animal impulses of man, unleashed to cry for the moon, and the crab, Waite says mysteriously, is the nameless and hideous tendency which is lower than the savage beast. Conversely, the card also stands for the formation of the solid from the nebulous, the fashioning of the child in the womb, the clothing of the products of the imagination with flesh. To some extent at least, the wanderer on the astral plane is in a world created by his own imagination, but his imaginings are real, though they may be deceptive and dangerous. It is on this path that the magician learns the art of making talismans, which are concrete embodiments of his desires and ideas. The moon rules night and the depths of the mind, and Pisces, ruled by Jupiter in astrology, is the sign of the fishes, the creatures which swim in the depths. 17. The stars. A beautiful naked girl pours water from two vases onto the earth and into a pool. Behind her, trees and shrubs are blossoming, and in the sky is a great star surrounded by 7 lesser stars. There are 8 stars altogether, and 17 reduces to 8, the number of new life. The girl is nature, pouring out the water of life to revive the world in the springtime. She is also the water of life in woman, the secretions which give promise of bliss, and the water of life in the mind, the gentle flow of intuition which brings hope to the troubled spirit. The card implies potentiality, expectation, the shining possibilities of the future, and is often connected with astrology and other methods of predicting the future. The eagle is a symbol of hope, because it soars into the heights. Aquarius, the water pourer, was originally the womanish Ganymede, who poured nectar for the gods on Olympus. He was carried off by Zeus in the form of an eagle, and the constellation of the eagle is near Aquarius in the sky. 16. The falling tower. A flesh-colored tower, its upper part shaped like a crown, is struck by a bolt of lightning and is beginning to crumble. 2 men are falling from it headlong. An obvious symbol of ejaculation, it stands for the collapse of a false philosophy, for the perception, as one authority puts it, quote, that the structure of knowledge built on the foundation of the fallacy of personal separateness is a tower of false science, unquote. The emergence of this perception is symbolized by the bear, which emerges into the world in spring from the solitary sleep of hibernation. The card is also a symbol of discipline, the testing of the Kabbalist's devotion to the order, the opposite of personal separateness. The nature of this testing is suggested by Crowley's references to the card as the Massacre of the Innocents and the Winepress. Absinthe and rue are bitter, and Mars is the planet of violence and destruction. The paths of the next three cards lead to Ferret, the sphere of the life force. 15, the Devil, has wings, horns, and claws, and holds a man and a woman on a leash of chains. In Babylonia, the number 15 was sacred to Ishtar, goddess of sexual love, and in numerology, 15 is closely connected with sex. 5, the number of sex and the senses, adds to 15 by occult addition, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 equals 15. And 15 is made of 5 multiplied by 3, symbol of the genitals. The devil frequently appears as a goat, Capricorn, and the goat and ass are both symbols of lust. The devil is the angel who rebelled from pride and was cast down to earth. The card is an emblem of power and mastery in this world, standing for the dominating forces of pride, ambition, and lust. 14. Temperance is oddly named if its Kabbalistic interpretation is the right one. 14 means change and transformation, because the moon changes from new to full and from full to new in 14 days. The card is a higher continuation of the world, connecting to Ferret and Yesod. It shows a figure pouring liquid from a silver cup into a golden one. The silver cup is Yesod, the moon. The golden cup is Tiferet, the sun. And the pouring liquid is the flood of a spiritual orgasm in which the soul mounts from a lower plane to a higher. Sagittarius, the huntsman, is a centaur, half beast, lower, and half man, higher. The horse and the dog are the huntsman's animals, and also stand for the passage from lower to higher, because they have been trained to help man. The hunter's chase is for knowledge, the discovery of the central driving force deep in one's own nature. Tiferet is the sphere of human consciousness, Yesod of the unconscious. And C.G. Jung has observed that, quote, if attention is directed to the unconscious will yield up its contents, and these in turn will fructify the conscious like a fountain of living water. For consciousness is just as arid as the unconscious if the two halves of our psychic life are separated. Unquote. 13. Death is a skeleton with a scythe. He is mowing a field of human heads, but hands and feet are growing in their place. This is a symbol of death and resurrection in nature. The lopped heads are the seeds which fall to the ground, and from which new shoots, the hands and feet, grow. The card shows the beginning of a process which is completed in the next card, and it corresponds to the stage of putrefaction in alchemy, a condition of spiritual exhaustion and decay from which new life comes. The heads, which stand for the higher, civilized, and constricting part of a man's being, fall to rot in earth and give life to the hands and feet, the grasping, molding, propelling forces of the lower nature. 13 is an unlucky number, partly because it is one more than 12, which is completion, and partly because there were 13 at the Last Supper from which Judas went out to betray Christ. But Christ rose from death to life, and 13 is the number of necromancy, the art of raising the dead to life. Raising the dead to life has an obvious phallic connotation, and in astrology, Scorpio, the scorpion, rules the genitals, and is in turn ruled by Mars, the planet of violent energy. The fierce wolf and the scarlet lobster belong to Mars. The beetle stands for the unending renewal of life in nature, from the Egyptian scarab or dung beetle, which rolls its eggs along in a ball of dung, an emblem of the life-giving ball of the sun resurrected each morning. And the beetle is also a symbol of the life-giving power of the dung, or decaying filth, of the depths of human nature. The paths of the hanged man and justice lead to Gebura, the force which breaks things down, and stand for death and judgment, the killing and purging of the false self which precedes the creation of the true inner self. 12, the hanged man suggests, Waite says, a great awakening that is possible, and that after the sacred mystery of death, there is a glorious mystery of resurrection. Death is the gateway to life, not only to life in the higher world of the spirit after the death of the body, but also to life in this world, because new human life results from the death of the phallus in ejaculation. The hanged man swings limply from a gibbet, head downwards, with two bags of gold dangling from his hands, and on his face an expression of pleased serenity. He is passion spent, the completion of a process. And 12 is a number of completeness, because from very early times, the year and the day have been made of 12 units, an idea which was powerfully reinforced in numerology by the fact that Christ chose 12 disciples. The hanged man's Hebrew letter is Mem, which the Sefer Yetzirah links with water, appropriately because both Mem and our M probably come from the Egyptian hieroglyph for water. Water is the blood of the soil, the bearer of life and fertility. It is the fount and origin, from the old belief that all things originally derived from water and that the chaos from which the world was formed was water. Water also means the deeps of the human personality, and so do the snake and the scorpion which live in dark and secret places. In the process of the hanged man, the magician is drowned in the flood tides of his inner being. The false self which is destroyed is the whole higher structure of outlook, attitudes, tastes, acquired mental and emotional habits which cages the inner man. In a reversal of values, the hanged man is upside down on his gibbet. This structure is overturned and fragmented to release the waters of the depths. These waters are fertile. They carry the seed of new life, of something within the magician which is potentially his true self. 11. Justice, the judgment which follows the death in the hanged man, is a woman holding a sword in her right hand, scales in her left. She is justice in the sense of an exact balance. The adept achieves a condition of passive equilibrium in which the conflicting elements of his nature are equally balanced. He does not prefer any idea or course of action to any other, and he matches each idea or action with its opposite. He is undergoing a purgatory, the cleansing of his being through the cancelling out of warring tendencies, and the purgative drug, bitter aloes, is made from justice's plant. Because it is one more than 10, 11 means a new beginning, and the card marks the conception of the true self shown in the impregnation of female, the woman, by male, the sword and scales. The adept is in the womb, passive and inert, waiting to be born in the next card, the wheel. The paths of strength, the hermit, and the wheel lead to chesed, the force which builds things up, and it is in them that the magician's true self is built up within him. 10, the wheel of fortune, is a wheel of 7 spokes, presided over by an angel who holds a sword in one hand and a crown in the other. It stands for destiny, fate, the unvarying cycle of nature, the ebb and flow of the iron tides of life and death, growth and decay, to which all things are subject. 10 is the number of all things. And Jupiter, to whom the soaring eagle and the rooted oak belong, was ruler of all. The wheel is the occult law of karma, the principle of as a man sows, so shall he reap. The true self has been sown in justice and is reaped in the wheel. It is born to become part of the revolving wheel of existence. The card stands for the intervention of the human in the life of nature, and on this path the magician becomes lord of the forces of life. 9. The hermit is an old man wrapped in a cloak, carrying a lantern and a staff. His path joins Chesed, the father, with Teferet, Christ, the son, the life force. And Waite says that he blends the idea of the Ancient of Days with the light of the world. Isolated and withdrawn from the world, he is yet a light and a beacon to others. Yod is the letter of the phallus, creative power, and in terms of sexual symbolism, the hermit means masturbation. The true self has reached puberty, as it were. The magician has found the master in himself. Complete in himself, solitary and virgin, The hermit's plants all have white flowers, emblems of purity, uninvolvement. He is a symbol of the fertility of absolute self-reliance. 8. Strength is a woman forcibly closing the jaws of a lion. Parallel to the falling tower, at a higher level, it is another emblem of discipline. Crowley's formula of the beast conjoined with the woman. This is an orgiastic and perverse formula which joins the opposite spheres of love and mercy, chesed, the lion, cruelty and hate, geburah, the lion. The woman's unnatural dominance of the lion implies the discipline of submission to the abnormal and distasteful. Nature is outraged by magic, man is bestialized and woman defiled. The pulsing excitement and self-discovery of this discipline is the beginning of a rapturous ecstasy which reaches its height in the next card, the chariot, and breaks down the barriers for the release of the true self. The lovers and the chariot rule the paths to Bina, crossing the abyss which separates the three highest spherota from the rest, the abyss between man and God. Occultists now follow Eliphaz Levi's rectification of seven, the chariot. A warrior rides in a chariot drawn by two sphinxes, one white and one black. In the old packs, including the Charles VI pack, the chariot is drawn by horses. The sphinxes have been substituted to show that the charioteer has solved the riddle of the sphinx. They are black and white for the opposites which the magician has yoked in his own nature, and on the front of the chariot is the lingam, symbol of the union of the sexes. The crab and the turtle, at home both on land and on the water, again suggest the opposites, and the magician's passage from the below of manhood to the above of godhead. The chariot parallels the hanged man on a higher plane. In this death, the adept is not submerged in his own inner depths, but in the life of the universe. To reach the godhead, he must destroy himself as an individual man and identify himself with the universe, which is God. He annihilates his mortal human personality and returns to the womb of Bina, or Babylon, the mother of all, who is also the whore. This is the alchemical process of exaltation, the making of the philosopher's stone, the absorption of man into the divine. It is achieved through an emotional and spiritual frenzy, which rises to a peak of ecstasy when the magician is flung out beyond the bounds of his own being into communion with all things. The Sphinx, the four elements plus the quintessence, a reversed communion in which he pours himself into Babylon's golden cup. Thou shalt pour out thy blood that is thy life into the golden cup of her fornication, Crowley says, in Liber Chet, or Hate, the Hebrew letter of the chariot. Thou shalt mingle thy life with the universal life. Thou shalt keep not back one drop. 6. The Lovers shows a man choosing between two women, or a young couple with a child, or a cupid, in the old packs, but Waite's version shows Adam and Eve naked in Eden, the gulf between God and man crossed through the creation of humanity in the image of God. The card has various implications, love and innocence, temptation, free will, choice, but it is also a symbol of the union of opposites. To cross the abyss to the one, man must balance the opposites in his nature and reconcile them. The balance and union of the opposites is shown in Adam and Eve, who were originally one being, and in the twins, Gemini, the magpie, and all pied and crossbred or hybrid creatures. In the passage of the abyss, the magician has a choice, which is implied in the lovers, the choice of Adam and Eve between obedience and disobedience to a higher law. If he accepts self-annihilation, he is reborn when he follows the path of the Empress. If he refuses, he becomes a black brother, isolated from the rest of the universe in the hard and evil shell of his own egotism. Quote, such a being is gradually disintegrated from lack of nourishment and the slow but certain action of the attraction of the rest of the universe, despite his now desperate efforts to insulate and protect himself and to aggrandize himself by predatory practices. He may indeed prosper for a while, but in the end he must perish, unquote. Crowley believed that this fate overtook MacGregor Mathers. Others believe that it overtook Crowley himself. The paths of the Empress, the Emperor, and the Pope lead to Chokhmah, the active, creative principle in God. 5. The Pope is called the Hierophant, one who reveals sacred things, by occultists. He is the Magus, who has attained spiritual power and authority. He corresponds to the process of projection in alchemy, in which the perfect substance, or philosopher's stone, is mingled with a base metal to turn it to gold. And he stands for the intervention of the divine in earthly life, a higher parallel to the wheel. He holds the keys of heaven and hell, which signify the knowledge of good and evil, and his right hand is raised in the blessing called the sign of esotericism, the thumb and the first two fingers pointing upwards, the last two fingers folded onto the palm. This indicates a distinction between above and below, God and man, the gold and the base metal, and the Pope is the pontifex, or bridge-builder, who links them. The symbol of Taurus unites the symbols of sun and moon, the above, from which light shines, and the below, which reflects it. Taurus is ruled by Venus, and the Pope, whose hand is raised in blessing, is a symbol of the impersonal idea of love. 4. The Emperor is the alter ego of the Pope, the ruler of things material. He stands for worldly authority, organization, government, law and order, the outward form and arrangement of things. He sits on his throne or leans against it, holding a scepter. The arms of the throne end in ram's heads, which come from Ares, the ram, the sign of virile energy and domination. The Emperor is God or man imposing order and form on things, the Magus who declares his law and dominates all things beneath him. The owl is the bird of Athene, the warrior goddess of wisdom, and Chokhmah is the wisdom of God. 3. The Empress is pregnant, fair-haired, and smiling. Her path leads Chokhmah and Bina, the active and passive or male and female principles in God, and she corresponds to Venus, the goddess of nature and love. The sparrow and the dove are amorous birds and subject to Venus. The swan is a symbol of satisfied desire, its phallic neck joined to its taic body. The Empress is often identified with the woman clothed with the sun in Revelation, standing for beauty, pleasure and fertility, the teeming life of nature. Her pregnancy represents the evolution of Godhead from infinite to finite, through the creation of the universe. The magician must go through the same evolution to reach Chokhmah. He has become one with the Godhead in Bina, and therefore infinite. On this path, he is born again as a being both infinite and finite. Keter, God, the Kabbalist's final goal, is reached by the paths of the fool, the juggler, and the female pope. 2. The female pope, called the High Priestess by occultists, is a dark girl crowned with the triple tiara and the horns of the moon, sitting on a throne between two pillars, one black and one white. The pillars mean duality, opposites, and woman. Between them is a veil, the unbroken hymen, virginity. Her path leads from Keter, God, down to Tiferet, Christ, and in Christian terms, she is the Virgin Mary. In occult terms, she is Gnosis, the ultimate knowledge of God, and she is the gateway to heaven, and so corresponds to the moon, which is the gateway to heaven because it is the heavenly body nearest to the earth. Man must penetrate the Virgin, or reconcile the opposites in his nature and destroy his own duality to become the One. The magician will destroy all duality of action in the fool, all duality of purpose in the juggler. In the priestess, he destroys all duality of thought. The ultimate knowledge of God, for the Kabbalist, is the complete knowledge of oneself. And in modern psychological terms, the priestess is the virgin, unconscious, or subconscious. Quote, it is, so to say, covered by a veil. Only when this veil is rent or penetrated by concentrated impulses originating at the self-conscious level, may the creative activities of subconsciousness be released and actualized, unquote. Which is another way of stating the magical doctrine that everything rests upon the principle of the stimulation of the inert, yet all potential, the unconscious, by the dynamic principle, the conscious ego. If unity is not achieved in the mind, the card has a sinister side. The dog is the beast of Hecate, the moon in her most baleful aspect, the pale mistress of death and ghosts, of the virgin and sterile against the impregnated and fruitful. One in the tarot pack. The juggler is called the magician by occultists. He is the celestial juggler who keeps the golden balls of life in endless play, a symbol of the single-minded creative will of God and man. One is the number of beginning, the first cause, the erect phallus, and the swallow stands for spring, the beginning of a cycle, the quickening of life. The ape and the ibis belong to Thoth, the Egyptian equivalent of Mercury, god of magic and intelligence. Vervain is a magically powerful plant, and the palm is an emblem of fertility and triumph. In modern psychological interpretations, the juggler is the ego, a conscious, directing force in the human personality. Taken in descending order, the trumps from the juggler to the Pope recall some of the Gnostic accounts of the creation of the universe, and in Gypsy tradition, these five cards are believed to represent the powers which rule the world. The juggler may stand for the divine mind, the true god of Gnosticism, and the priestess and empress for the thought which arose in the mind. The priestess is the thought in its original purity. The empress is the thought after it had been impregnated by the mind to become the mother of all things. Among the lower powers which descended from the thought was the demiurge or cosmocrator, the maker of the visible world. He was sometimes said to be the creator of things material, the emperor, and also of things spiritual, the pope, in the sense of conventional religion and morality. Many of the Gnostics believed that the demiurge was evil, and some of them identified him with the devil. The emperor's path is a continuation of the devil's on the tree, and he is called Son of the Morning, which suggests a punning reference to Lucifer, Son of the Morning. The Pope is also not free of ominous undertones. Simon Magus said that the powers which made the world set up standards of morality as a way of keeping men in bondage to them, and Eliphas Levi pointed out that when the hand is raised in the Pope's sign of esotericism, the shadow which it casts is the head and horns of the devil. Finally, at the head of the major trumps comes Zero, the fool. He is a jester in motley with a stick and bundle over his shoulder, close to the edge of a great cliff. He is happily chasing a butterfly, not looking where he is going, and his next step will take him over the cliff. A curious animal, which may or may not be a large cat, is bounding beside him. In the old cards, it seems to be biting his leg. He corresponds to the first path, leading from Keter towards the rest of the Sfirot, and to the first Hebrew letter, Aleph. The Sefer Yetzirah links Aleph with air. The eagle is lord of the air, and the Egyptian hieroglyph for A was an eagle. The fool is a symbol of foolishness or madness, but his is a divine folly. Air stands for spirit, and the fool is the spirit of God about to descend into the nothing, falling from the cliff at the beginning of creation. And the fool is also the perfected spirit of man approaching the One. The One pervades all things and is free of all limitations. It contains all qualities, and yet it has no qualities, for to ascribe any quality to it is to limit it. The fool is the zero which contains all things but is no thing. He is as free, as all-pervading, and as insubstantial as the air. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh or whither it goeth. So is every one that is born of the Spirit. The minor cards of the tarot are used mainly in fortune-telling. The suit of swords, spades, is generally ominous and unlucky. The nine of swords is the card of death. The 10 foreshadows pain, sadness, desolation. The 8 means ill health and bad news. The suit of coins, diamonds, naturally stands for money, business, prestige, and worldly matters. The knave of diamonds is traditionally a card of ill omen, and so is the king. There is a story that Joachim Murat, Napoleon's brilliant cavalry leader and king of Naples, consulted the famous card reader, Mademoiselle Lenormand, cut the pack, and turned up the king of diamonds. He tried three times more, and cut the same card each time. He pleaded for another chance, but Mademoiselle Lenormand threw the cards at him and told him he was destined for the gallows or the firing squad. He was executed by firing squad in 1815. The suit of cups, hearts, is generally fortunate and stands for love, laughter, happiness, good health. The ten of cups means lasting success, the three, pleasure, the ace, beauty and fertility. Wands, clubs, are connected with energy, enterprise and activity, probably because the wand is a phallic symbol. The three of wands, T.S. Eliot's Man with Three Staves, is associated with trade and merchandise involving ships and the sea. Fear death by water.